to do something to thank my friends for being so good to me. To repay a bit of the debt I owe them for taking me in. That's all. That's it. My mom sighed, taking a sip of her coffee, as my father leaned forward.
You can understand, I'm sure, he said, that it's surprising for us that you're close enough with people we barely know to break our rules and trust this way.
I wanted you to know them, I said. I still do. I invited Mac in that night when we first talked about the studio. You met him, Dad. I wasn't keeping him a secret.
Oh, well, good, my mom said, because I was beginning to think you lied about everything.
Why are you being like this? I asked her. I'm not a bad kid, and you know it. This was one night, one thing, one mistake, and I'm sorry, but you can't...
Your brother started with one mistake as well, she replied, which led to another and another.
I'm not Peyton, I said. It seemed crazy I'd have to say this, as all my life they'd made it clear it was the one thing they knew for sure.
You're damn right you're not, and you won't be, as long as I have anything to say about it.
She pushed back her chair, getting to her feet. First thing Monday, we go meet with Perkins Day about transferring you. In the meantime, you go to school and nowhere else. I want you home by 3:30 every day until we get this sorted out.
Sorted out?
My voice and panic were both rising.
You can't make me switch schools.
Suddenly, she was pouncing, lunging across the table at me, slapping her hands on the surface.
I?
She said, right into my face as I drew back, startled.
Can do whatever I want. I am your mother, and I make the rules. From now on, you follow them. We're done here.
She pulled back, straightening up. But I stayed where I was. I was still gripping the chair arms when she left the room. For a moment, my dad sat there, not saying anything. We both knew he'd follow her, the way he always did. But it was the pause before that I'd recall later. Like if my parents were finally going to shift from their respective, decided responsibilities, this was when it could happen. Maybe he might have listened if I tried to explain. It couldn't have made things worse. I'd never know, though, because then he was getting to his feet, wearily, and pushing the chair in behind him. Court adjourned. I had Peyton to thank for everything that happened that night. After our conversation, he had indeed reached my mom on her cell, just as my parents were checking into the hotel. I could picture the moment of her answering, her face brightening as it always did at his voice, and then her smile wavering, followed by confusion as he told her, now adamant, that he did not want her there. I imagined her resisting, explaining, tears audible in her voice before filling her eyes. Then silence as Peyton told her he wouldn't be attending the ceremony, even if she was, and hanging up on her. All of this was so easy to imagine, as was the drive back home and the moment she came in and Ames told her what was happening downstairs. The weird thing was that even though what followed I had seen with my own eyes, it was the part that still felt like a dream. By Sunday morning, my mom was rested and ready to focus on a new project. Me. It was obvious the moment I came down to breakfast and found her at the table, with a shiny new folder, a stack of papers, and her coffee.
So I've been in touch with Headmaster Florence, she said, skipping a salutation. And she's of the mind that a mid-semester switch is not in your best interest.
I paused, right where I was, to give Mrs. Florence
a tall woman with bird-like features who had never been particularly fond of me, my eternal gratitude.
So I get to stay at Jackson?
My mom picked up her coffee cup, taking a sip. Until the end of the marking period, yes. After that, we'll revisit the issue. In the meantime, there will be some modifications.
That didn't sound promising.
I went over to the fridge, taking out the milk, then gathered my cereal in a bowl. She was waiting for me to ask her what was in store, I knew, and the only power I had was not doing so. So I didn't.
Starting tomorrow, she said, I've signed you up for tutoring and SAT prep at the Kiger Center, Monday through Friday, 3:30 to 5.
The Kiger Center was where Jen worked, in the strip mall just across the street from the Arbor's guardhouse. My grades are good, though, so are my prep test scores.
There's always room for improvement, she replied. Additionally, there's a Kiger study group that meets at Jackson each day at lunchtime. I've signed you up for that as well.
I have to study at lunch?
She leveled her gaze at me.
You're a junior now. SAT prep is crucial. You need all the practice you can get.
But, I said, realizing even as I spoke that arguing was probably futile.
All I'll be doing is studying.
She opened the folder, jotting something down on a sheet of paper inside.
Well, then you'll be more prepared to transfer back to Perkins, or to one of the other schools I'm considering, after the break.
Other schools? This just kept getting worse.
There are actually quite a few options since I last did this kind of research, she said.
She took out a sheet of paper, putting it in front of me.
Kifney Brown is my first choice, but you'll need to really work to pass their entrance exam. There's also a charter school that just opened with a focus on math and science that's intriguing. But I'm just beginning to read up on it.
I'd thought the dread I'd been feeling since Thursday night had already hit its maximum. Seeing the printed spreadsheet of schools, each listed with its average SAT score, tuition, if applicable, and requirements for enrollment, proved me wrong. I knew my mother in this mode. Peyton had finally succeeded in stopping her from organizing his life. Now she had her full arsenal of resources, not to mention all the time in the world, to focus on mine.
She's just reacting still, Mac told me when I reported all this. My parents hadn't taken my phone as part of my punishment, yet, so I was calling and texting him as much as I could while I still had the chance.
It freaked her out, seeing you with the bottle and all of us there. Too much like your brother.
She wants to send me to Kifney Brown, I said. That's like the genius school.
She's delusional. Even with all this studying she signed me up for, I'd never have a chance.
It would probably still be better than that charter, though, he replied. Irv has a bunch of friends there. Says it's like college.
There was that dread again. Not about the academics, although that wasn't exactly calming. Worse, though, was the thought of being away from him, from Layla, from this world in which I'd somehow managed to find a place. That was assuming, however, they still wanted me.
Has she said anything?
I asked him again. I'd texted Layla multiple times, even gone so far as to leave a voicemail, but had heard nothing in return. To be fair, she'd been clear about her rule concerning dating Mac, but I was hoping for forgiveness, and if not that, a chance to explain.
She's been caught up with Spence, he replied. Total drama. You know how they are.
It was kind of him to sidestep the question, but it just made me feel worse. To me, the Chathams were like that merry-go-round out in the middle of nowhere in the woods. I hadn't been aware they'd existed. It was pure luck to have stumbled upon them. Now that I had, I couldn't forget and go back to the way I'd been before. Just knowing they were out there changed everything, especially me. Monday morning, my mom sent me off to school with my own folder, containing the information about the Kiger lunchtime study group, attendance taken daily, she'd highlighted in bright yellow, as well as a packet with the details of the after-school program. When I got to my locker before the first bell, Mac was waiting for me. The only upside of all this, and it was a big one, was that we had no reason to hide anymore.
Hey, he said, long time no see.
I smiled, or tried to, and then he was wrapping his arms around me, pulling me close. Despite all of the typical loud noise of Jackson around us, it was like everything went quiet as I pressed my face into his shirt, feeling his pendant against my forehead. He smelled like soap and coffee, and I just wanted to stay there, breathing nothing but him for as long as possible. But the bell was already ringing, so he walked me to homeroom, kissed me, and disappeared into the crowd. I looked for him everywhere, though, and for Layla. Jackson, which had seemed so vast and infinite when I first arrived, had become manageable, even familiar, once I had friends there. With no contact at lunch, my chances of seeing any of them were left up to fate. Between second and third, over the heads of several people, I caught a glimpse of Eric. I rerouted every chance I had to pass by Layla's locker. She was never there. At lunch, rushing to the Kiger group, I craned my neck at a window, trying to see the benches where I knew they gathered, but had no luck. My mother's plan was working. I was alone again. It was so much harder this time.
"It's going to be okay," Mac told me that first afternoon, as we grabbed a fleeting few minutes at his truck before I had to leave for the Kiger Center.
Already my mom had texted me twice, reminding me to be there at 3:30 sharp to meet her for an overview of the program.
"It's just the first day. We'll work it out, I promise."
I wanted to believe this, and him, but I knew my mom. Once she had a project in her grasp, her grip only tightened. I didn't say this, though, as he leaned down, putting his lips on mine. When we finally pulled apart, I opened my eyes to see Layla across the parking lot. She had on her army jacket, her hair loose over her shoulders, and when she saw us, she stopped walking. We looked at each other for a moment, Mac there, unaware between us. Then she turned around and went back the way she'd come.
"Okay," Jen said later that afternoon, when my mom had finally left the Kiger Center after exhausting everyone with all her questions and concerns. It was 4:45, so I had no time to actually get anything started, but she insisted I stay the full time anyway.
"What is going on?" We were in the front lobby. Her PSAT cram class, made up mostly of Arbor's kids, was taking a practice test down the hall. The short version is that she caught me with friends over when she was out of town, and I was drinking. Her eyes widened. I could always count on Jen for a reaction.
"Seriously?"
I nodded. The longer version involves me trying to help out my friends, Ames being typically creepy, and my mom happening to walk in at the exact moment that I took my only sip of alcohol.
Long version sounds more complicated.
"That's why it's longer." I sat back in the uncomfortable chair I'd chosen. It was clearly meant for people to only alight on for short periods, not actually settle in. "My parents were supposed to be at Lincoln for something of Peyton's, but he told her he didn't want her there. She came home, walked in on me, and has basically had me on lockdown ever since."
"Except for daily tutoring and SAT prep class here," she replied.
She looked around, then lowered her voice before adding,
"Nobody does that, by the way. even the people who need it. And you don't. She has me at the daily Kyger lunch study hall at school, too.
What?
Bigger eyes. God, I loved Jen.
What's she trying to do? Make you skip next year or something?
She's got her eye on Kiffney Brown, or that new charter.
Oh, man. You don't want either of those. The kids at Kiffney are competitive to the point of bloodthirsty. And Mark's charter is so hard to get into. I know people who went on Xanax just to apply there.
This was her area of expertise.
Anyway, everyone knows continuity of education is something admissions officers look at. Does she really want you to have to explain 3 schools in 2 years?
I think right now she just wants to keep me away from Mac and Layla. Everything else is secondary, as much as she's trying to pretend otherwise. Down the hall, there was a burst of giggling.
I hear you!
Jen called out, and quickly it got quiet again. She sighed, shaking her head, then said,
I know about Layla. Who's Mac?
Her brother, I replied. The pizza guy from your party? Do you even remember?
I've tried to block out what little does remain.
She cleared her throat.
What's her problem with him?
I looked down at my hands, trying to think of a way to explain whatever it was that was going on between me and Mac. I was still grappling when I heard her laugh. With old friends sometimes, it's what you don't say that speaks volumes.
Sydney, she said, reaching out and slapping my leg. Oh my God, why didn't you tell me?
It's really...
You're blushing, she hooted. No wonder you haven't wanted to hang out lately.
I looked at her. I'm sorry, I've been kind of a lousy friend. I got kind of caught up, I guess. She didn't say anything for a minute, acknowledging this truth and the apology for it. Then she smiled.
It's okay. But seriously, back up and tell me everything. Also, I want to see a picture. Do you have one?
I did. Several, in fact. Some from that night at the merry-go-round, a few I'd snapped from the passenger seat as we drove around together. But only one of both of us, taken in the cab of the truck at Commons Park. I'd held my phone out at arm's length as I leaned back into him, and he'd rested his chin on the top of my head. You could see the leaves falling out the window behind us. Click. Wow, she said, when I'd scrolled past this one. I must have been really drunk, because him I would remember. I smiled, looking down at it as well. He's a really nice guy. And all of this just really happened, like, recently. Now with this and Layla finding out.
Finding out? She repeated.
What, it was a secret?
Sort of, yes.
I shut off my phone. The last friend of hers who dated him left him kind of wrecked.
You wouldn't do that, though,
she said with such surety it was like she was reciting a theorem or historical fact.
She knows that, right?
I hope so, I said. Right now, she's not exactly talking to me. Jen sat back, crossing her legs.
Wow, I don't talk to you for a week or two, and everything in your life changes. All that's different with me is my ringtone.
Stop it, I said, smiling.
It's true!
She looked out the front window at the traffic passing by. Maybe I should transfer to Jackson.
Please do. You can go to Kyger Study Hall with me.
She snorted, then looked at her watch. I better get back to my morons.
Jen,
I said, surprised.
Oh, please. It's no secret, trust me. Most of them are taking this class for the 3rd time.
She leaned over, giving me a quick hug.
I hate how you ended up here, but I'm happy to see you. Is that bad?
I shook my head.
No. Just don't get sick of me. I'll be here a lot if my mom has her way.
Not gonna happen. She got to her feet. See you tomorrow?
Yep.
And with that, she headed down the hall, ducking into a door off to the left. I sat there until the clock over the front desk hit 5 o'clock exactly, then went out to my car. I was just getting in when my phone beeped. It was my mom. Heading home? I actually glanced around, thinking she might be watching me from somewhere nearby. I would not have put it past her.
Right now, I replied.
A pause while I cranked my engine and backed out of the space. Over at the Kiger Center, some of Jen's morons, students, were filing out, chattering with one another. See you in 5, my mom responded. For some, this was a figure of speech, casual. But I knew she was watching her own clock. I drove home as slowly as I could, like doing so might change what was waiting there for me. As I pulled into the driveway, I could see the afternoons following this one laid out in front of me, one after another, neat little squares filling the calendar. It made me want to speed away as fast as I could and not look back. But I was a good kid, despite what my parents thought. I went inside. Chapter 20.
2 extra large veggie, 2 extra large Roma, Greek salad, onion rings. Go.
I picked up my phone from beside my calculus book, smiling. Girls, I wrote back. Unhealthy vegetarians. The one with the salad also got the onion rings. I hit send, then waited. It was a Thursday night and I'd been on my new schedule for almost 2 weeks. It felt like longer, like years, to be honest. Even though I'd figured out how to see Mac for a few minutes before school, after, and sometimes en route to study group at lunch. At night in my room doing even more homework, I kept my phone close at hand so we could be in constant touch. It wasn't the same as riding along with him, but I'd take it. A few days into all this, when we met at my locker before the early bell, Mac told me to close my eyes and hold out my hand. When I did, he dropped something into it.
Okay, you can look now.
I opened my eyes to see a silver chain, like his but thinner, longer, with a saint pendant on it. It wasn't the same as his, though. The image was a man's profile, his eyes turned upward.
Who is it?
I asked.
No idea. I found it in a jar my mom has full of them, he said. I was looking for one like mine, then just someone I recognize. But then I thought maybe it was cooler to have it be a mystery, you know? So it's not just about one thing, but anything. That way it can be about what you want it to be.
I turned it over in my hand. Like the image on the front, the back was well-worn, the few words there unreadable. Saint anything. I looked up at him. I love it. Thank you.
You're welcome.
He picked it up, undoing the clasp, and I turned around and lifted up my hair. When he draped it over me and fastened it, the pendant hung low against my heart. This seemed fitting, as it was where I kept Mac now as well. From that point on, it was a solid daily reminder that even though I was by myself a lot, I wasn't alone. Not anymore. Even though I continued to do everything my mom asked of me, she had not let up one bit. I remained on the tightest of timetables, my days consisting solely of school and studying. I'd become such a presence at the Kiger Center that they'd offered me a job working the front desk, which was allowed only because it kept me close to home and would look good on my applications. So now, instead of the study sessions Jen had assured my mom I did not need, I answered phones, fielded questions, and helped oversee practice tests. It wasn't nearly as much fun as delivering pizzas, but at least I was out of the house.
Right again, Mac texted me a few minutes later.
Apartment full of estrogen.
Did you doubt me? A pause, then.
Nope.
Most nights, it was these exchanges that got me through, along with the short conversations between deliveries, and longer ones once he was home and doing his homework before bed. My phone, which I'd always viewed as necessary, was now the only evidence I had of my life before that night in the studio. School and home were so different, but in my pictures, my text messages, and the ringtone I'd programmed just for Mac, bells like a merry-go-round, I had proof that I had lived another life, even if it was on pause, for now.
"You're seriously not missing much," he reported to me one night. "Irv is still eating everything in sight. Eric's obsessed with coming up with the perfect band name before the showcase. Same old, same old."
"What about your mom?" Mrs. Chatham had been to the ER twice in recent days due to blood pressure issues related to another new medication she was on. Both times she'd been released relatively quickly, but I could tell when he was concerned, that natural wariness turning to all-out worry.
"Better," he said. "I'll tell her you asked about her."
We were both quiet a moment. Then finally, I said it. "And Layla?"
"She's coming around," he told me. "Just give her some more time."
I could do that. Time was all I had, even if I didn't have a say in how it was spent. But in those afternoon hours as I sat at Kiger or at our kitchen table with homework in front of me, I missed her. Not in the concentrated aching way I did Mac, but something broader. I'd think of our time together at Seaside, pizza crusts between us, her tapping her pencil and staring out the window while bluegrass played on the jukebox behind us. The complicated fry preparation at lunch, her voice singing high and light or laughing as she ribbed Eric. It was like Dorothy in The Wizard of Oz, going from black and white to color, then back again. You first had to have something, change, light, friendship, to understand the loss of it. And I did. I was also very aware of the fact that Peyton was not calling. A month or two earlier, I probably wouldn't even have noticed. And if I had, I'd have been relieved. Now, though, on the days I was home, I put on Big New York or Los Angeles and tried to focus on it, thinking of him and his friend maybe doing the same. Instead of feeling better, though, it made me miss him in a way I couldn't quite explain. Everything was different now. The following Saturday, I was at work, trying to help an Arbor's ninth grader in a field hockey uniform download our app. I couldn't figure out if the problem was her phone or our internet, so I'd ducked under the front desk to reset the connection. When I came back up, Spence was right in front of me. "Hey," he said, flashing me that same million-dollar smile I remembered from the day of three pizzas.
"Look at you."
"Look at me," I repeated, gesturing for the girl to try the download again. "What are you doing here?"
"SAT test tutoring session," he replied, sliding his hands in his pockets. "Need to juice my scores. Hear the tutors are hot. That true?"
The ninth grader inched down the counter, putting space between them.
"Smart girl."
I said, "How's Layla?" A shrug.
"She's okay. Haven't gotten to see much of her lately. Shit kind of hit the fan at home."
"Really?"
"Yeah."
He flipped his hand, this one gesture encompassing the entire story.
"No biggie. I'll show up to this enough. I'll be golden."
Just then, Jen came down the hallway, following her 2 o'clock study group. As they bunched around the doorway, heading out, she plopped into the chair beside mine. "Is it 5 yet?" she asked.
"It is somewhere," Spence told her, leaning forward on his elbows. "That's what I always say."
Jen gave him a polite smile. I looked at my computer, pulling up the Kiger schedule,
This is Spence, I told her. You're 3 o'clock.
No shit!
He grinned at me, then her. My day just got better.
And yours got worse, I wrote on a piece of paper, sliding it over to Jen under the counter. She raised her eyebrows. Layla's boyfriend, I added. By this point, I'd told her enough of the long story to make it unnecessary to provide more details.
Okay, she said, getting to her feet. To Spence, she said, did you bring your study materials?
My what?
The list you were emailed, with what you'd need for each session? Spence looked at me.
My mom set this up. No hablo any list. Sorry.
Jen sighed, coming out from behind the counter. Follow me. He did, and thus ensued the first of several, in Jen's words, excruciatingly painful tutoring sessions. It's not just that he thinks he's so charming, she said to me later as we were packing up, although that's a lot of it. He's also just really, really stupid. It's not a flattering combination. I'm surprised Layla can stand him.
She'd be the first to tell you she does not have the best taste in guys, I replied. And I don't even know if they're still together anyway.
For her sake, I hope not. She zipped up her bag. I don't even know that girl, and I'm sure she could do better. Apparently, Layla had in fact not yet realized this. The next Saturday, I looked out to see Rosie pulling up in front of Kiger's front window, Mrs. Chatham riding shotgun. As she turned toward the back seat, I saw Layla there, gathering her purse into her lap. Her hair was falling across her face, so she didn't spot me as she replied, then got out of the car. It was only when they drove off and she peered in the window that our eyes met. I never forget a face, she'd said all those weeks ago. But I wondered what she thought now, seeing mine. She had on a black sweater, jeans, and motorcycle boots, her bag slung over one shoulder, and like every other time I'd caught a glimpse of her since that night, I realized how much I missed her. On the counter in front of me, my phone lit up as a text came in, Mac's icon popping up on the screen. For once, though, I didn't grab it. Then, like a reward, she was coming in. The tone sounded over the door. Beep! But neither of us said hello. She didn't approach the counter, either, stopping instead by one of our uncomfortable foyer chairs. Still, this was progress, so I did my part and spoke first. Hey, you here to meet Spence? She looked at me.
Yeah. He said you were working here.
So she had known and came here anyway. Another good sign. Just for a couple of weeks now.
You like it?
No, I said. For this, I got a mild smile, encouragement enough to add. My mom signed me up to be here every day. I might as well get paid for it. Layla sat down on the chair arm, pulling her bag into her lap. Max said she's keeping you on a pretty tight leash.
More like a choke collar.
Saying this, I realized I'd been holding my breath. She'd mentioned Mac, though. That had to be good, right?
God, I hoped so.
How have you been? She shrugged, playing with a bit of fringe on her purse.
All right. Busy. My mom's been sick some. I guess you knew that, though.
Up until this point, the whole conversation had felt like a house of cards, liable to collapse at any moment. But this was Layla. I'd always spoken straight with her. It felt wrong to do otherwise, even if it was safer.
Look, I said, I should have told you about Mac, how I felt. I'm sorry.
She bit her lip, still fiddling with her purse. Then she looked at me.
I just couldn't believe you kept it a secret. I thought we told each other everything.
We did, I replied. She raised an eyebrow.
Okay. But you'd been so clear that you did not want any of your friends ever liking him. And I did. I do. I didn't want to have to choose between you. But then everything happened, and now you hate me anyway.
Sydney.
She cocked her head to the side. I don't hate you.
You're not happy.
Because you guys snuck around behind my back. How was I supposed to tell you? You said you never wanted to have a friend date him again.
No, what I said, she told me, was that I'd never again be responsible for bringing someone into Mac's life who would hurt him. Are you planning to do that?
I shook my head.
No.
Good. Then there's no problem here. Other than you guys made me feel stupid. And I hate feeling stupid. You know that.
I'm sorry, I said, meaning it.
Okay.
She took a deep breath, then let it out.
But if you do hurt him, I don't care if you are my best friend. I'll kick your ass. Are we clear?
Crystal, I replied. Now I got a real smile, and then she was coming over to the counter across from me.
So, tell me about this tutor of Spence's. He claims she's got the hots for him. True or not?
For the next 10 minutes until Jen and Spence emerged from their study room, we talked non-stop about Mrs. Chatham's visits to the ER and yet another new medication she was on, how Rosie's return to training was going, and her hopes of returning to the Mariposa tour, the latest on Eric submitting the demo to the showcase. No word yet, but he was wholly confident, as always, and the ongoing band name debate. Then, finally, how Spence's grounding after getting busted for breaking into his stepdad's liquor cabinet had made their meetings practically impossible.
But you're here, I pointed out.
Only after much strategizing and just for an hour, she said. He told his mom he was taking an extra session, so he's not expected back until 5. But he got his car taken away, and I never have any of ours, so we're at Rosie's mercy.
Or Max, I said.
She shook her head.
He was never a fan of Spence's, but after what happened that night at your house, and to you, he's not doing anything to help him out, even if it means helping me, too.
Hearing this, I felt touched and guilty all at once.
Sorry.
It's okay. I understand. She tucked a piece of hair behind her ear. But, like you were saying, when you really care about someone, you can't just stop. Even if you have a good reason, you know?
I nodded, and then Jen was coming down the hallway, a tired expression on her face. Behind her, I could hear Spence saying,
"Lighten up! I didn't mean it as an insult. I was just saying if you smiled more, you'd be a pretty girl."
"Just stop talking," Jen told him. "Please."
"Prettier! I meant prettier," he added,
just as he rounded the corner.
"Oh, hey, baby! You're here!"
Layla just looked at him, a flat expression on her face. I said,
Jen, this is Layla. Layla, this is my friend Jen, from Perkins Day.
Jen, ever friendly, stuck out her hand.
"Nice to meet you, finally. I've heard a lot about you."
"Same here," Layla replied. They shook.
"So is he a genius yet?"
"Not quite," Jen told her, sitting down behind the counter. "But we have made some progress on vocabulary."
"Abscond," Spence said to Layla,
sliding an arm around her waist.
"That means run away with. You impressed?"
"No," she said, pulling back.
"What if I buy some fries?" he asked.
"It's a start," she sighed, pulling her bag over her shoulder, then said to me, "See you Monday?" I nodded. "See you then." Jen and I watched them leave, the door buzzing as they did so. They started across the lot to Crash Burger, whose fries I knew Layla rated a 7 on her 10-point scale. Good news for Spence.
he needed all the help he could get. At 5 o'clock, Jen and I shut down the computers, locked up, and said goodbye. I was standing by my car, digging for my keys, when I heard a horn beep. I turned and there was Rosie, pulling into a spot nearby. When I waved, Mrs. Chatham gestured for me to come over. "Hi," I said, as she rolled down the window, smiling at me.
"Hi yourself,"
she replied as Rosie put the car in park.
"What are you doing here?"
"I work at the tutoring center," I told her.
"Mom, I'm running in the drugstore.
You need anything?" Rosie asked.
"Nope. I'll just stay here and catch up with Sydney."
Rosie climbed out of the car, shutting the door with a bang behind her.
"So, how are things at home?"
I wasn't sure how much she'd been told. My guess, however, was enough so it would make sense as I said, "Complicated."
"Ah," she said, nodding. "How's your brother?"
"He's..." I trailed off, for once, not sure what word to use to describe Peyton. We were actually talking a little bit, about my mom, and kind of about what happened, as well as some other stuff. Not much, but a little.
"That's good to hear,"
she smiled at me.
"Slow progress is still progress."
"I'm realizing," I began, then stopped, taking a breath. Maybe I didn't know exactly how he was feeling. I assumed a lot. I feel kind of bad about it.
"You shouldn't," she said. "Relationships evolve, just like people do. Just because you know someone doesn't mean you know everything about them, even your brother.
It's just weird. Like, I got used to talking with him, but he's not speaking to my mom and not calling." I looked down at my keys. "He got upset with her about being so involved in his life, even in prison. So now I'm her main project."
"I did hear," she said, "that you've been otherwise occupied."
I glanced over at Crashburger. There was no sign of Layla. According to the sign outside the bank, it was now 5:04. My mom was waiting. But I didn't want to leave. Not yet. The thing is, I can admit I did something I shouldn't have. Broke her trust. But it was the only time I ever did. The only time I've done anything wrong. By the way she's punished me, you'd think I was the one who almost killed someone. A car drove by, the music loud and all bass, in that way that makes your teeth hurt. Mrs. Chatham waited until they passed us, then said, "She's scared, Sydney. She doesn't want to lose you, too."
"It's not fair, though. I'm paying for what Peyton did, again. I'm sick of it."
She gave me a sympathetic look.
"Remember how you told me how often you think about that boy? The one your brother hurt?"
"David Ibarra," I said. She nodded.
"If you feel that way, that strongly, that guilty, can you even imagine how it is for her? You were just a bystander, but your brother, that's her child, her responsibility. Whatever he does is part of her, always."
I thought of Rosie. With her bust, she'd only really hurt herself. Or so I'd thought.
"What I'm saying is that she can't take back what he did, or even begin to fix it," she continued. "But she can try to make sure, with you, that it never happens again on her watch. It's all about regret and how you deal with it. That's something you two have in common. Maybe you should talk to her about it."
"She doesn't discuss David Ibarra ever," I told her. "As far as she's concerned, it's all about Peyton. Just because a person isn't talking about something doesn't mean it's not on their mind. Often, in fact, it's why they won't speak of it." I was quiet a moment, thinking about how Peyton had surprised me. Then I said,
Because it makes it real.
Exactly.
A breeze blew up behind me, kicking some leaves into the air. I wished in that moment that I was at Commons Park with Mac, not thinking about any of this. It was easier to just be mad at my mom. Sympathy and empathy are complicated things. But nothing had been simple. Not for a long time. I looked at the clock. 5:10.
I should go, I said as Rosie came out of the pharmacy, a bag in her hand.
Still no sign of Layla. She freaks out if I'm unaccounted for. Mrs. Chatham nodded, then slid a hand out the window toward me, palm up, fingers spread. I gave her my own hand, and she squeezed it tight.
Just think about what I said, yes?
About talking to her.
I will, I replied. And thanks.
She winked at me, then released my hand, just as Rosie got in, climbing back behind the wheel. Once in my car, I looked over at them, sitting there together. They were talking, Rosie drinking a soda while her mom ate from a bag of potato chips. I watched her pop one in her mouth, then offer the bag over. Rosie took one, then handed her the soda to take a sip. All wordless, so natural, a sync long established. It was such a little thing, hardly important. But it stayed with me all the way home.
Well, that's just ridiculous. I've never even heard of such a thing.
I'd come home with Mrs. Chatham still on my mind. When I pulled up to the house and saw Ames's Lexus in the driveway, however, any possibility of bridging the topic of David Ibarra with my mom was shot. Inside, I found him at the kitchen table while she stood at the stove, stirring a risotto.
I've only been late 1 month before this, Ames was saying.
One!
I think they just wanted me out so they could jack up the rent for some other sucker.
You need to look at your lease, my mom told him, glancing at me as I put my backpack on the counter. See if they're actually allowed to do this. I could call Sawyer if you like.
No, I don't want you to go to any trouble, Ames replied.
Then he looked at me.
Sydney, I was wondering when you'd show up.
Work ran late? My mom asked. Of course she'd noticed.
Just a little, I said. Can I help with anything?
You could set the table. Put a place for Ames. He's staying.
Oh, Julie, he said, as if he didn't know being over at this hour meant an automatic invitation. You don't have to take pity on me. I'm a big boy.
You're practically homeless, she replied. The least I can do is feed you. I walked over to the silverware drawer behind the kitchen table, making a concentrated point not to look at Ames.
My crooked landlord kicked me out today, he explained anyway. Add that to being laid off last week, and I'm batting 1,000.
Ridiculous, my mom said again. When it rains, it pours.
I'm in a monsoon, then, Ames replied.
He was still talking directly to me.
But I've got a couple of leads on jobs and some friends with open couches. I'll be okay.
My dad was pulling into the driveway, the garage door opening.
You don't have to resort to that when we have a free bedroom just sitting there, my mom said.
You'll stay with us until you find a new place. I froze, my fist full of forks.
Julie, no,
Ames told her, a fake firmness in his voice.
I can't impose on you like that.
You're not imposing, she replied. After all you've done for Peyton and us, it's the very least we can do. Somehow I managed to set the table. Then sit through dinner. Ames was there in my brother's traditional seat, to my dad's left and across from me. And now he'd be moving into his room as well. He continued to pretend to resist while my mom assured him it was just until he was back on his feet.
After we ate, I took as long as I could to load the dishwasher and clean up before I went upstairs to do homework. Even so, I had a front row seat as Ames unloaded his stuff. Such a coincidence! He happened to have it all in the car, load by load into the room next to mine. Each time he passed, he glanced in at me. Finally, I shut the door. Chapter 21.
We're in!
I'd never seen Eric run before, but in the seconds preceding this announcement, he'd covered the school parking lot in the blink of an eye. Now, panting, he stood before us, eyes wide.
In,
Mac repeated, prompting him.
The showcase! We made it!
He bent over, hands on his knees, then sucked in a breath and straightened up.
I just got the text.
Seriously? Layla said. Eric nodded, still breathing hard.
It's 3 weeks from this Friday, at Bendo. Five bands, all ages. Holy crap, I think I'm having a heart attack.
Dude,
said Irv, who was leaning against the truck, eating a bag of pretzels.
You seriously need to work out more.
3 weeks,
Max said.
Not much time to practice.
Which is why, Eric told him, we need to go hardcore. Clear the schedule, pedal to the metal. This takes top priority, starting now.
Some of us have jobs,
Mac pointed out. And lives, Layla added. Eric just looked at them.
Are you serious? This is our shot, our big chance. Winner gets to record a real demo with Hambone Records. That's where Truth Squad and Spinnerbait started out.
Hate Spinnerbait,
Mac said.
True, but the point is, Eric continued, nothing is more important than this.
Except my post-school meal, Irv said. So if you want a ride, you're buying a double burger.
I can't believe you go there, Layla told him, shaking her head. Their fries are greasy. And mushy.
Just how I like them,
Irv replied, and she rolled her eyes.
Come on, Bates, my stomach's grumbling.
As he said this, he was still eating pretzels. Irv's appetite always surprised me, but at times like this, I was almost scared.
Practice, Eric said. Tomorrow, right after school.
Yes?
I'll tell Ford.
I'll see what I can do,
Max said.
Do what you have to. This is serious. There's no gray area here. We win or lose, triumph or go down in flames, succeed or...
Why is there never a gray area with you?
Irv said.
Everything's always brilliant or catastrophic.
Because, Eric replied, that's the way true artists... That should be your band name, Layla, studying her phone, said. Irv said,
true artists?
No. Brilliant or catastrophic? Silence. Due to experience, I was expecting immediate rejection of this from someone, probably Eric, followed by the debate beginning all over again. But then Max said,
I like it.
It is intriguing, Eric agreed. He thought for a moment. Also, it fits the idea of our ironic take on the songs we're doing as well as what they did for the larger community of music. So pop. Total earworms. You have to give the songwriters credit. Even while acknowledging the damage they caused, not just to the integrity of the music industry, but society as a whole. Society? I asked.
I just like how it sounds,
Irv said, starting to walk away. I'll sit with it a while, let you know what I think, Eric told us, falling in behind him. Watching them go, all I could think was that they were the oddest of pairings. Huge guy and hipster guy, Layla observed, once again reading my mind. They're like superheroes, without the, super part. I snorted, then looked at my watch. I was doing that these days. It's getting late. I better go. Mac looked down at me. Already? The 15 minutes or so I had here in the parking lot before I had to leave for Kyger always went too quickly. I left my computer charger at home, and my mom's bringing it to me. I need to be on time today.
Okay,
he said. But his arm stayed around me, and I didn't budge. This usually took a couple of tries. As I thought this, I felt his phone in his pocket buzz against my leg. I extracted myself as he reached for it, glancing at the screen.
Shit.
What is it? I asked.
My mom.
On my other side, Layla, studying her own phone, looked up. What's going on? Mac was already typing something.
Shortness of breath, and she started to pass out. They called the doc, meeting him at the hospital.
Crap, Layla said. Let's go. She pulled open the truck's passenger door, throwing her bag on the floorboard. Mac, however, stayed where he was, again scanning his phone's screen.
We're supposed to go to Seaside and stay there.
What? I want to go to the hospital.
Dad says no. He wants us to man the shop.
Mac started around the truck.
Rosie will keep us posted.
You know she's terrible at that, Layla said. We're lucky she even told us they were en route. I need to be there.
Are you not listening to me? I can't take you. Now get in. We've got to go.
I'll take her. I said this without thinking. It was only in the next beat that I remembered I was already late leaving for where I had to be.
You sure? Mac asked me, climbing behind the wheel. What about your mom?
It's an emergency. She'll understand.
I hoped. Keep me posted?
Yeah. Layla grabbed her bag while he cranked the engine. Thanks, Sydney.
Sure.
He backed out of the spot, kicking up a cloud of gravel dust all around us, and started driving out of the lot, dodging the familiar potholes. At the stop sign by the guardhouse, he barely paused, prompting a shouted warning from the security officer there. And then he was gone. Which hospital? I asked Layla once we two were on our way out. U General. That was all the way across town.
Are you sure?
It's the only place that takes our insurance, she replied. Sorry.
No, it's okay, I assured her.
I glanced at my dashboard clock. 3:30 already, and we hadn't even left yet. I tried not to think of the time, even as we hit every red light along the way. I'd never been to U General. Everyone at the Arbors used Lakeview Methodist, which was brand new and only a mile away. And the signs were hard to follow, especially in a distant part of town I didn't know well. Finally, after winding our way through a construction zone and two more red lights, I was pulling up to the emergency room entrance.
This is good, Layla said, gathering up her stuff as I slowed to a stop behind an ambulance, its back doors flung open.
No one was inside.
Do you want me to go in with you? I asked her.
No, I'm fine. Thanks. I'll call you, okay? She got out, shutting the door behind her, and slung her bag over her shoulder before walking quickly through a set of automatic doors. I felt guilty for not going with her, balanced by a sense of relief as I pulled away, finally heading in the right direction. On my way around the traffic circle, I passed a city bus stop, the bench packed with people. A little boy with his arm in a sling, his face solemn, watched me as I went by. By now, I was a full half hour late for my shift at Kyger. I'd already texted Jen that I'd had an emergency and would be there as soon as I could. But she wasn't the one I was worried about. All the way to the hospital and back, through traffic and more red lights, I kept waiting for my phone to buzz. Where are you? My mom would ask, and I didn't even know how to tell her in a simple text. I was just hoping for mercy once we were face to face. When I pulled into the Kyger lot, I found Ames instead.